Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno.
I'm back.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be back for my first regular ep in years.
Fully. In years? Ep. You haven't done a fully in a long time?
I don't think we've done a fully. Well, we didn't do fullies for like over a year, right?
Yeah, that was a year where we had a lot of topics.
Yeah. So I haven't done a fully in a really, really long time. Well, because the world stopped.
Right.
That was part of it.
So we're doing a fully.
So I'm excited.
So, what's going on?
What's going on? Not much.
Well, for those of you who don't know, well, with fullies, we do three segments. The first segment, we talk about goings-on in media culture and Trailer Corner. And then we talk about the second segment, we talk about what we're chilling with. And then the third segment, we talk about our current obsessions. So, news. I'll tell you what I'm not going to talk about.
I was just going to say, you know what's funny? I hesitated because we just said, let's not talk about this, but we were just talking about it.
Well, by the time this episode comes out, I think people are already sick of it, but by the time this episode comes out, people really...
We're talking about the slap heard around the world.
Yeah. I have nothing hot to say about it. I've got nothing to say about people I haven't said.
What if we just came in super hard and we were like, Will Smith was right, 100% right.
Loving the memes, I guess.
The memes are really phenomenal. Phenomenal work.
I do feel bad for the people, the other people, everyone else. Like, I saw Coda recently, and it's a shame that those people don't get to enjoy them.
So you were the one who saw that?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure it was. I haven't seen a single one of those movies.
Not the movie of the year.
Did it win?
Not.
I didn't even know it was movie of the year. Yikes.
If you put a gun to my head,
I could tell you what it's about or who's in it.
At its best, Coda has that transcendent thing of this is a great movie. But at its worst and at its average, because it's mostly, it feels like an after-school movie. Mm. Like a lot of it is like I've seen this before. Yeah, it's like, okay, she's a girl and she's from a deaf family and... You know, she speaks, but her family doesn't speak.
Oh, is that the one with Marley Matlin?
Yes. Of course it's got Marley Matlin in it.
Because it's about deaf people.
Yeah.
She's the only working deaf actress.
She's the biggest deaf star ever.
Yeah. Loved her on West Wing.
Yeah. And the girl's a coder, child of deaf adults.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I knew nothing about this.
Okay. And she's a singer.
I thought it was some sort of thriller with Dakota Fanning.
Not at all. She's a singer and she wants to be a singer, but her family is all deaf. And it feels like an after school special.
Yeah.
Good movie, not best movie of the year.
Did you think that there was another one that should have been best picture of the year? I haven't seen any of them.
I always have a hard time.
Oh no, West Side Story, the best movie I've ever seen in my life. Forget it. Hands down, best movie I've ever seen.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say I'm not good at these because I can't remember things, but of the other movies that I saw, I haven't seen West Side Story yet.
Well, you should.
Of the other movies I saw, I would say, Licorice Pizza, I'd probably say, is my favorite movie of the year.
Didn't see that.
And I like Dune a lot, but I could see why people wouldn't like Dune. Dune's a great, filmic achievement.
Yeah, not my cup.
No.
What
not
about,
your cup. Jen straight up fell asleep in the theater.
Oh, I would have too.
Watching Dune. Especially... She claims she didn't, but she did.
And this time around, there's no young Kyle MacLachlan to keep my...
Oh, but you got that Timothy Chalamet.
I don't get it. I don't get the Chalamet of it all. I really don't.
You got that Zendaya over there.
Zendaya, isn't it?
Zendaya.
Is it? I thought it was Zendaya.
She says it's Daya. Daya.
Daya.
She says it's not as fancy as you think it is.
She's beautiful.
She's a talent. Do you watch that fucking...
Euphoria? Yeah. No, because I teach high school, and I feel like it would just be weird.
Yeah.
Because the kids all watch it and talk about it.
We watched the pilot, and we were like, we can't keep doing this, right? This is it's so dark and icky, and it's like, I would have liked this when I was young, but now I feel like...
Is it like super nihilistic? And
it's super nihilistic, but it's also like, you know, it's super, super soapy. And it's like...
I'm not mad at that if it doesn't take itself too seriously. It looks like it might take itself a touch too seriously.
It takes itself extremely seriously.
Okay, see, I don't like that.
But I did watch recaps of every episode, so I know exactly what's happening.
Who is the actor on that show, though, that is in that clip from the red carpet? Have you seen that?
No.
Where the woman interviewing him was like... she's like, what's next for you? And he's like... It's like, he's like so high. He's like, oh, I'm probably going to take some pictures with some people. And then she's like, can you tell me what else you're excited for tonight? And he's like, he goes, no, thank you. And he's from Euphoria.
Of course.
He's just like this very high teenager.
He's a very high teenager.
It's really funny. I heard The Lost Daughter was really good.
What the hell is that?
That was nominated for Best Picture, I think, wasn't it? With I thought it was. The one that Maggie Gyllenhaal's first... film is
I have not seen a lot of these. Are like hard to find. I haven't seen The Way of the Dog either, which is people comparing it to Brokeback. It's supposed to be very good.
I haven't even heard of that movie.
I believe it's another gay cowboy film.
We don't have enough.
Never enough.
Can you believe Crash won over Brokeback?
Are we still talking about this? Well, I've said this a million times on this podcast, and I'll say it a million more.
You hate the Oscars.
I don't give a fuck about the Oscars. I never have. They've always been out of touch. Just go look at the fucking nominees and look at the fucking winners, and you'll just be like, what are any of these movies?
The two most memorable moments from the last like five Oscars were like just like things that shouldn't have happened. Like,
right, the slap.
Well, I saw one meme that was so meta, where it was like the meme of Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, but yeah, it said Moonlight slapping La La Land. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's like up its own ass meta about the Oscars.
But even like going back, like when it's always been things like that. Like when David Niven, someone streaked behind him on live TV.
What year was that?
That was way back in the 70s, I think.
Oh, I saw that.
It was just a naked fella on the television. Yeah. And then there was... when Brando won the award for Godfather, he hired an actress to play a Native American.
What?
Like, first, it was like she went up like a Native American and like was talking about the plight of Native Americans. But then we found out she was an actress who wasn't actually Native American. So it's the things that always stand out.
It's a weird choice. God.
The things that always stand out are like those things, you know? And look, the ratings suck. You know, they're dying for people to watch.
Nobody watches. They keep making it shorter and shorter. Nobody watches it. They keep cutting categories left and right.
And adding, like, new categories so they can talk about superhero movies, because that's all kids think about.
Well, that's the remember that proposal they had of, like, doing best film and then best popular film?
Yeah, they ended up not doing it. Or they didn't do it that way, but they did add something.
They made the best picture category way bigger. But originally they were going to do...
Well, that they've done for a while.
Yeah, but they were going to do Best Picture and then Best Popular Film or something.
Yeah.
So that they can nominate, like, Batman and Marvel movies.
Did you see in the memoriam, who got Farina'd? When I say Farina'd, I get that from We Hate Movies.
Yeah.
The great actor Dennis Farina, when he died, was not in the memoriam.
There's always somebody
they
forget.
So now we're talking about Farina'd. Well, Norm MacDonald's Farina'd, and he was in movies. And somebody else, too. Somebody big was
not
like,
Betty White.
No, she was definitely
never Betty White.
Who else was Farina'd? There was somebody else that was like, how could you not put them?
What was the year of celebrity death? 2016, right? Wasn't that the year when like every celebrity died? Yeah.
I liked Bill Murray doing the little introduction to Ivan Reitman.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch a minute of it.
Yeah, you know. I liked the moment. Well, I never watch it, but I go and I watch it online. Mm. The moment that I liked the most was... the 50th anniversary retrospective of The Godfather. And they brought out Francis Ford Coppola, Al Pacino, and Robert De Niro. And everybody gave it a standing ovation. And it was like, it was a tiny thing. It was just like, hey, remember The Godfather? Wasn't that great?
Hey, remember The Godfather? Goat Boy.
You guys remember The Godfather?
It insists upon itself, Lois.
Of course, Puff Daddy introduce that?
Of course.
Of course.
Is he back to being Puff Daddy?
No, he's still...
P. Diddy?
P. Diddy, I think. He hasn't do... What does he do now?
I don't know.
Anyway. So, do we have any news?
So, the Oscars happened.
You want to talk about Scream 6? They're fast-tracking... We've talked about every Scream movie, and we just did an episode on Scream.
Yeah.
2020.
Yeah, I was going to say Scream 5, yeah.
Scream 5. But because that was successful, they're super fast-tracking Scream 6.
Well, that usually makes for good movies.
Well, that ends up being like the Halloween Resurrection.
Was Scream super successful?
I think it was.
Like by COVID standards or by like real standards?
Oh, I don't know what that even means anymore.
Because everything's by COVID standards. We saw it in an empty house.
Right. Well, no, it feels like it got memed and kids liked it.
Okay.
It seems young people enjoy it. I can tell you when I look at our analytics, our Scream episode has remained in the top 10 of our episodes.
Of us ripping it apart.
So people still listen to our Scream episode.
Our original Scream episode?
No, the new one.
Oh, okay. I guess people just like look for Scream.
Most of our episodes just get released and fall into utter obscurity.
yeah, of course.
Like somewhere
as we intended.
It's like down there with MySpace in the bottom of the internet.
You can find. We're now streaming on MySpace.
PCMs are coming to you on Friendster.
Put us in your top 8, baby girl.
So they're doing a 6. Everyone's back. I don't know. It has to begin.
Everyone will now. Spoiler alert! It's just Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell.
It has to begin with one or both of them.
Everyone,
dying.
The new kids are back too.
Yes. Yeah. The remaining living ones. I think they do really want to make Vanessa like the new protagonist of these movies. She's the new Sydney. It's going to be about her.
Who could care?
I don't know. Well, look. Here's my one statement about this. Like we said, it was like The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
If this new one is like The Last Jedi, if
they do something different.
Right. If we did the safe one and now Scream 6 is like bananas. Like
Sydney's the killer.
It begins underwater and then like the Scream guy kills a fish. Or like, you know, Sydney's the killer, right? It like just something. It's 12 killers. Like, anything different and crazy, I'm totally for.
The question is, which one isn't the killer?
Yeah. We are all, right. What if that would be such a great...
What if it's a bottle episode, like a bottle movie, and they're all stuck in a room?
I'm desperate for anything.
That's different.
To do anything.
It's just like, it's like no exit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm not surprised.
Scream 6.
So what are they going to call it now? Because now they've painted themselves into a corner.
Scream T-O-O.
Scream again. Scream 2. Like, to look who's talking to.
Scream more.
Scream again. That was the original title of the original Scream 2 was Scream Again.
That would have been good. Well, I mean, that would be like in way of like Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends.
Which was...
Scream a little bit more.
Stupid.
Scream a bit more. That's what it's called.
Screamish.
You know, it's a franchise. It's really a franchise that keeps going.
Well, good. Best of luck to him. I mean, we'll see it and do an episode on it.
Sure, you bet we will. Anything news you want to talk about?
Gosh, I didn't prepare for this segment. I forgot about the segment.
Well, let's talk about the trailers then. We watched the trailers.
Yeah.
Let's start with the trailer for Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
All right.
Thoughts?
Amazing. It looks so incredible.
Now, this, of course, is based on which was a viral video from years ago.
A series of viral videos, right?
I think it ended up being like 3 or 4.
Okay.
The first one was real big, and it's Jenny Slate's invention. She even did a kid's book with him.
Yeah. I just always remember, like, it's all like questions.
Yeah.
Like, you know what my hat, guess what my hat is? A lentil.
Yeah.
Like little cute little things.
Yeah, it's just super, super cute.
Her voice is so cute.
Yeah, it's a tiny little...
Shell
with one googly eye and shoes. And the videos were just somebody talking to it, asking it questions and explaining about its little life.
Yeah.
And this movie looks like it's like it lives with its grandma, who's voiced by Isabella Rossellini. She's like Marcello.
And he goes to find his family.
Yeah.
I cried watching the trailer.
It looks beautiful.
Artful use of Phil Collins.
Well, it's an A24 movie, and I don't know if you know this, like, kids are really into, like, A24. Like they're like, oh, that's such an A24 movie. Like, it's like when we were young, we were like, that's such a dimension movie.
Okay. It's just got the aesthetic.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big distributor of indie-ish movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, two movies on our list are A24 movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Can it sustain a whole film? Because its charm is that its character is cute, interesting to look at, because it's like stop motion.
What if it's like 3 hours long?
It better be like 70 minutes tops.
I don't know. It looks pretty expensive.
I mean, I think it was released at a film festival and did pretty well.
It got like really good reviews.
I love Jenny Slate.
She's America's sweetheart.
I've loved
Obvious Child.
Obvious Child. I loved her last stand-up specials. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah,
me too. Too good for SNL. Yeah. Too good for it. How about that?
Yeah. She's one of those people whose career took off after SNL.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks great.
It looks adorable. It's got like a Phil Collins song.
Yeah, that's the Phil Collins in the trailer.
Take me home.
Yeah. And then there's like all these, like, you see shots of like all these other little things that are her family.
But they're like, not all like shows. Like one is a little pretzel.
Yeah.
So it's like,
they're
what
just
are
like
we,
little things.
They're just little things with shoes and googly eyes.
That's so cute.
Why is the grandmother Italian?
Fuck jab. And then you see Brian Williams being like, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
Oh,
looking for his family.
In the beginning, she's like, me and my grandma, we like to watch 60 Minutes.
What's her name? The newswoman.
She's fierce.
She's fearless.
She's fearless. And then she interviews, or is it Leslie Stahl?
Yeah, Leslie Stahl.
She's fearless. And then she interviews her later.
So good.
It seems like it's about the documentarian that we heard in the shorts is like making a movie and helping her find
is
helping him.
I find, think Marcel is a boy, right?
Yeah, he is helping him find his family. I guess.
So adorable. It looks so much better than it has any right to be.
Yeah. And it's like, it came out of nowhere for me at least.
Oh yeah, me too.
Cause I saw like one little thing about it, like the day before it came out. And I was like, oh, I haven't thought about Marcel in years, and then, like, there's a trailer.
I haven't heard that name in 30 years.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, this is wild.
Yeah, it looks really, really cute.
Yeah, yeah. What else? The Bob's Burgers movie.
See, I had no reaction to this, because okay. I've never watched the show.
I'm watching it now.
Okay.
We're on season 6, I believe.
Okay.
We absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great.
It is. but I only started watching it recently.
So are you excited about the movie?
Yes. Well, it's got that thing that you don't see anymore, which is like very from like the 80s and 90s, where like it's 2D.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And also like it looks like the show, but better. Like, remember it's that like, feeling that you would get from like the Jetsons movie?
Yeah,
or whatever?
It's like the cartoon, but there's shadows.
Yeah, there's shadows.
There's some depth.
There, some of the movement is not just stock movement. Like, they're making expressions that they don't normally make.
Right.
It looks, it's somehow the same, but more cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting.
Kind of like the Simpsons movie when that came out.
Yeah.
What an absolute disappointment that movie was.
I hope this isn't one of those.
I hope not either. What were they thinking?
They should have, boy, I've thought about this so much.
And why did they never make a sequel to try to redeem themselves after that?
They were supposed to, and it never happened.
Which is weird, because it made a ton of money.
They should have made it more like a traditional film, meaning they should have hired an actor, they should have hired a writer to write one script and then work on that one script, rather than what they did, which was they did the whole thing by committee. It's a bad way to make a film.
It has a weird quality where like it looks like they were trying to go for like making it a standalone thing. Like, it doesn't have the same tone as the show did at the time. Right.
But it's also, its tone is all over
the
place.
Its tone is all over the place. You see Bart's dick.
Yeah, it doesn't know what it wants to be. It doesn't know what it wants to do. It doesn't know where it wants to fit into the canon.
The characters don't feel like themselves.
Yeah, things don't look right.
Yeah, it's a weird fucking movie.
Yeah, it's...
And they were like, we need to put every character in this.
The more I've seen it, the more I like it as just a Simpsons story.
Okay.
But it's not at all what you would ever have wanted from a Simpsons
movie.
This story, the Bob's Burgers movie, it looks like a slightly bigger story. you know, but it fits, it seems to fit into the story, like...
It's like they're going to lose the burger
right, shop, which right? is, but that's always happening. Like, they're not a successful business. Many of the episodes are about that they have no money, and they're, so, but now, like, they're really going to lose, it looks like they're really going to lose it. Their landlord, Mr. Fishoder, voiced by Kevin Kline. This is probably his first movie in, like, 10 years. They owe him money. But then there's a sinkhole.
Yeah.
Isn't that also happen in a Simpsons movie,
sinkhole? I think it does, yeah.
There's a sinkhole in front of the restaurant, and then, like, the kids. It looks like the kids have a story. But much like the Simpsons, there's a huge cast of characters in Bob's mm-hmm. Burgers. Like, anybody who ever appears in Bob's Burgers, no one's ever one-off. They'll then appear, like, even four seasons later. So it really builds a world. I'm excited about it. You know, if you compare it to the other mainstream animated shows like Simpsons and Family Guy, Bob's Burgers is sweet and funny without being cynical.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm so conservative that I need a show to be not cynical. Mm-hmm. But I think at the time, I think when Bob's Burgers first came out, and maybe this is still its reputation, people thought of it as minor compared to The Simpsons and Family Guy. I mean, even The Simpsons would, like, make jokes about Bob's yeah. Burgers. But it's like, I think it's, to me, Bob's Burgers actually reminds me of early Simpsons. But
where it still had heart.
Where it still had heart, and it was about a family. Mm-hmm. And Simpsons grew out of that, but I think Bob's Burgers never did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bob's Burgers, for an animated show that can get really silly, the relationships are still, I think, what makes the whole thing work. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. Jen has the ears.
That's cute.
So she's going to wear those ears when you see the movie. We were thinking about being Bob and Linda for Halloween.
That's cute.
So very excited.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's weird how things pan out and, like, the way the cookie crumbles, so to speak. Because, like, I feel like, I don't know if this is always going to be its legacy, but I feel like we're in a time right now where, like, Family Guy hasn't held up well.
What's funny is it's still on.
But I feel like nobody, like, speaks favorably of it anymore.
Well, it became very cool to not like it.
Yes.
So the cool thing is not liking it. And also, like, its humor doesn't fit with our more contemporary sensitivities.
Right.
Like, everything is problematic. There are a lot of,
like, problematic.
Yeah, it's jokes. All super yeah. problematic.
From the golden age of it, which was, like...
But even now it's very problematic, but now people are like, I don't want to... People just were like, I refuse to be part of it.
Well, South Park is weird like that, because South Park is still on.
But South Park doesn't ever get called problematic. People love it.
It still doesn't ever get canceled, and it has a rabid fan base, and it's interesting, because I wonder if, like, that... Sometimes I think that it's the people who watch and enjoy South... Because South Park has a liberal sensibility, but it's not woke in any yeah. way. And sometimes I feel like the people who watch South Park are the people who are like... Old school liberals who are, like, really into satire.
Right.
And, like, we're, like, we can joke about things because we're making fun of ignorance.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, that group that still exists are still watching South Park.
Right. But those people don't like Family Guy.
Right.
And partly because the South Park guys were so hard on Family Guy when it came out. Like, yeah, they made a dividing line between...
Because they... Yeah.
I mean...
It's weird. It's weird that, especially since... I mean, Trey and Matt were shit on when that first came out.
Right.
You would think that they would be.
But now they're hoi polloi.
Right.
They do Broadway shows and yeah, are important I mean, people.
It's crazy to think of that. Like, Book of Mormon is just, like, a huge success.
Yeah.
And yeah. has been on for, like, over 10 years now.
It's so cool to dislike Seth MacFarlane. And I like his stuff. I even, yeah. you know, I do.
No, yeah.
I once went on a date with a young woman. And we went to see Ted 2.
Okay.
And she sat next to me. And she was having a great old time. She was laughing at every joke. Me and her were laughing together. Ha, huh, this is hilarious. And then after the date, she went, I didn't like that. And I said, no, you did. That's not an opinion. I saw your face laughing a lot. She was like, yeah, but I didn't like it. And I was like, fuck. We never went on a second date. I was just like, you were never going to like it. Your choice was to not like it. Meanwhile, you enjoyed the hell out of it.
Right.
Because it was a stupid movie about a bear that talks.
Right. What is it that people don't like about Seth MacFarlane? You know, I'm equally...
I mean, he's problematic, but again, like, why does that not work with the South Park?
Right. I'm equally
like,
baffled.
Like, why is that called satire, but, like, the character of Mort...
Right.
Like, you go, well, that's anti-Semitism. Right. It's like, is it just bold-faced anti-Semitism? Right.
No, of course not. There's no nuance. Yeah. Well, it's like, there's a lot of people... that are, like, very anti-Tina Fey for similar reasons.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like a lot of, for a while there, like every, she was America's sweetheart. Everybody loved Tina Fey. And now it's like the cool thing to hate Tina Fey.
Well, us liberals, we will turn on you. Like a conservative star will always be a star, right? But liberal stars, we're with you until, like, at some point we're not with you.
Right.
And then we comb through everything you ever did and just pick out all the shit that we hate.
Which, yeah, I mean, I still love Tina Fey. I still love 30 Rock.
Yeah.
I see, and it's funny, is I feel like on social media you see so many 30 Rock clips and you see so many comments of people being like, a lot of people hate the show, but I still think it's really funny.
Yeah. It's like, well, it's like that date I had. Have the bravery to say that you enjoyed it.
Right.
Ted 2's good. And you know what?
You think it's better than the first one?
No, but
it's got more of a plot.
Yeah, I like that it's not a paint by number sequel. It's like a totally different story.
It's like, does he have personhood?
Yeah, it's crazy. And that whole scene with the improv, and he's like, all right, give me a celebrity. Robin Williams. All right, enough. All right, somebody give us a location. The offices of, what is it? Hebdo. The fucking... Anyway, so the third trailer we watched was for the thriller Men.
Men.
This is not a sequel to the TV series Three and a Half Men.
Men. That was the... Men. That was in the... I watched the wrong thing, you're telling me?
Yeah, I thought... I was like, where's Charlie
this
Sheen?
This is lighthearted fun.
This is a thriller horror movie wherein all the men are played by the same actor.
I'm going to come right out and tell you. I had to watch the trailer twice because the first time I was like, is this all the same guy?
Me too. Don't feel bad. I didn't get it until the little kid. I was like, that little kid looks like a grown-up.
You're not fooling me.
Like, that child has a grown-up face.
Well, it's also, I had to watch it twice because I was like, what are they up to here? What's going on? And it wasn't until I watched it the second time that I realized that, like, every man is trying to get her to, like, take ownership for the fact that her husband killed himself.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe you should just admit that it was your fault and you should apologize.
Yeah, yeah. The priest character is like, what do you think you did to drive into that?
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those movies where it's like, what is this whole thing an allegory? There's heavy references to Adam and Eve.
Yeah, oh, right. The she takes the apple and he's like, you shouldn't eat from the garden.
The Garden of Eden and the forbidden fruit. And,
yeah.
You know, like this whole thing of like womanhood being tied to sin.
Right. And the name of the movie is Men.
Men,
and
right.
Men are scary.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Fox News to be like, what is this movie about men? It should be about how awesome men are.
We're the best. Yeah. Oh, I can totally see Tucker Carlson. Now, if you're liberal, men are scary. All you need to do to be scary is be a man.
Was he the one who was like, imagine you go to the emergency room and your doctor's Dr. Jill Biden. She's a fucking PhD.
What an absolute idiot. That whole thing makes me so fucking mad. Because it's like, do you really mean to tell me you've never heard of a PhD until 2020?
He's somebody that I only half believe.
It was a lot of people saying that all at that time. She's deceiving us by calling herself Dr. Jill.
Well, it's sort of a strain in anti-intellectualism that they finally feel comfortable saying out loud, which is they don't like the idea of education. So the idea of someone calling themselves doctor, they really don't like.
It's insane.
Unless you're like a medical doctor who says ah.
Right. It's insane. Insane. Those are physicians. Like, that doesn't make you a doctor.
I know.
It's because they've gotten a doctor in medicine.
I know.
Oh, God.
But Men.
Men looks great.
Men is directed and written by Alex Garland, who did Ex Machina, which I think is one of the best science fiction movies ever.
Yeah. Jeff Garland.
No, not Jeff Garland. We're talking about Alex Garland.
Oh, right.
By the way, have you seen the clips of CGI Jeff Garland in the fucking... they throw him into fucking Goldberg's episodes?
No.
Because he quit? Well, he was fired. He was fired, but they still like need him in the story. So like, they'll have like a guy who's too skinny and you see him from the back. And I was like, that's weird. And then like, they'll just throw his head on something. Like, there's recently...
so the character is still there?
Yeah. There was recently a wedding episode where, like, there's just a man in a suit with, like, CG Jeff Garland head on it. It's so
upsetting.
That is
horrible. Does he speak?
Yeah, but, like, he speaks like Princess Leia in Rise of Skywalker, where it's, like, non sequiturs from a different thing. Like, he's, like he's on a different thing entirely.
It's just, like, from Curve. Susie!
Yeah.
That show's, is that, are they winding down? Like, they've got
to
be.
Oh, God, they really need to
they
be.
Really, how long is it going to be the 80s on that show?
We're almost hitting 10 years, so it's got to. And I like that show, but it's just, it needs to be done now.
Yeah,
we're done.
Especially
we
now.
Did it, folks.
Yeah, really. We came and did what we needed to do.
We did it. We're done.
There can't still be clips at the end of every episode, right?
They are, but you know.
Are they real?
I mean, it's stretching.
Okay, yeah.
It's
like,
a lot of stretching.
How much home
point.
Video did that guy take?
Yeah, well, that conceit was never totally, it was more of a conceit than an actual thing.
Well, in the beginning, wouldn't it be like more closely aligned? Like you'd see
it would be
like,
his family.
What it really was. Like it would be like something from the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's more like, well, it's funny. I used to like to try to figure out what it was going to be. If it was like, there would be, like, if there was an episode where there was like, this is my childhood friend, Charlie. And then like Charlie's dad would be played by someone who's clearly not an actor. I'd be like, that's the real Charlie. I fucking know it. I'm going to say it. And then I would always be right. But this movie looks, Alex Garland's movie, like he also did Annihilation, which is a good movie. Mm-hmm. His movies are hard to make trailers for because they're like, this looks like it's kind of like in the vein of Rosemary's Baby or like, so, you know, it's, or you know, it's a thriller about this woman who's mourning.
Mm-hmm.
So like the trailer can only give you a vibe. Who knows what's going to happen really?
No words, just vibes.
There's this scene where she's like, looks like she's walking and like she's under a bridge that's really dark. There's one scary thing where, like, you see, like, a dark figure come out from a tree.
Yeah,
what's... And she's like, somebody's following me.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, what's going on there?
It looks like it's going to be about paranoia. You know, it seems a little bit like Babadook, where it's about, like, mourning and, like, the psychological terror of mourning.
Yeah, it's got, like, that. It's like Rosemary's Baby or, like, a Black Swan or, like...
Yeah.
Something like, I bet you, like, you don't know what's in her head and what's real. And
It'll be out and then people will be like, this is what this means.
Mm-hmm. Ending explained.
Yeah, I love...
Everybody will be Googling that.
Yeah, someone will make the ending explained video where it's like, actually... This is the Book of Revelations because this guy is that guy and that guy is that guy. Movies are all just codes that we can unlock. Bye, internet.
It's a great voice. Like that horrible movie Room 237.
Yeah.
God, that movie sucks.
The poet Billy Collins was talking about his students and he was saying the problem with students is when they read a poem, they want to tie a poem to a chair and beat it with a rubber hose until it explains what it means. And that's not what a poem does. And you see that with, you know, film culture or like film culture online.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking in the last episode about Eyes Wide Shut. You can say, you can make connections and be like, oh, it's about MK Ultra. Oh, it's about the Illuminati. And it's like, nah, it's about nothing. Like Stanley Kubrick was just had ideas and he just put them on film. He was not trying to
it was just
secretly message you.
Vibes.
Yeah, he wasn't like trying to be like, oh, guys, I really did the moon landing.
Well, that's the thing. When it goes from a critical read to this is a secret code.
Right, to a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and that's what Room 237 really gets into that.
Oh, yeah, like some of it's like.
And it seems to be condoning that. Which is what I don't like about it.
Right. It's a weird way of reading.
And they got that weird guy's like, you'd be surprised. People, when I say these things, all of a sudden the phone's ringing off the hook and people are looking for me. It's like, wow, you're insane.
Right. He made The Shining as a way of trying to communicate to the audience that he did the moon landing. You got it.
Because Danny wears a rocket ship in one scene.
Right.
On his shirt.
Right. The only thing I like about that documentary is it at least shows you a bunch of different theories. So it gives you an idea of how theorizing works. Mm-hmm.
But they get increasingly
increasingly insane. Like there's the obvious stuff about Native Americans. I do kind of like the read that maybe Jack is homosexual and it could be about, you know, him being closeted and those kind of fears and stuff. But in the end, why don't people realize that there's power in not having a defined... like answer.
I know.
That's why David Lynch is the best because he refuses to answer anything about anything.
Yeah, that's the best way to be.
People ask him questions and he just laughs at them. He goes, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I say that all the time to my students when they're like, well, what did the author think? I'm like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And even if they told us, that doesn't mean we need to believe them or agree.
Or they could be wrong.
Right.
They could have failed. The zeitgeist in which they made the work can be speaking through the text.
Right.
I mean, that's why I'm such a post-structuralist. Like, I always feel like my reading of it is more important than what any author wants it to be.
Right. Well, because you're you, so it's more important.
Well, of course, yes. But also, I'm alive. You know what I mean? Like, well, yeah. I'm alive and fucking Hitchcock's dead, so who cares what he thinks about right. fucking Rear Window?
Like, yeah, in the course I'm teaching right now at the college, we're doing Kindred by Octavia Butler, which is, like, one of my all-time faves. And, like, there's this big debate. It's not really a debate, but it's just, like, that's a novel that just, like, transcends genre, because it's, like, partially sci-fi, partially, it's so good, partially sci-fi, partially slave narrative, partially historical fiction. It, like, transcends genre, and it plays with genre,
yeah.
And, like, the author once said, like, it's not science fiction. I like to think of it as a grim fantasy,
yeah.
And a bunch of people will be like, it's not science fiction because Butler said it's not. It's like, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you see science fiction motifs in it and you interpret it as belonging to the science fiction canon, whatever that may be, like, you could argue for that.
Yeah.
It's all just an argument.
Right, exactly.
No one's ever right.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All right, well, let's take a break and we'll come back with the shush shush. Bill Gagliardi. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Bongiorno.
Hey.
This is the chill session. Chill shush.
Do you do that for obsessions? We do that for chill sesh now too?
Chill shush.
Chill shush. It's really just, it's the chill shush.
The chill shush. This is the shush where we chill. And what have you been chilling?
Abbott Elementary.
You keep asking me if I've seen it.
I keep asking everybody if they've seen it.
And I have not.
And I'm browbeating everybody. Because it's good. It's really good.
You know what I think about when you say it?
What?
I think about that other shitty show about the school that I did not like.
What shitty show?
The one with the guy from Always Sunny.
AP Bio?
Yes.
Oh, God. It's nothing like that.
Okay. But I think it is.
Okay.
And that's what's important.
What? Yeah. Well, that's... They should have anticipated
Why should
that.
I watch a network show?
Well, here's the thing. And this is part of the reason why I like it so much. Is it's that rare gem... Mm. Like a Modern Family or a Goldbergs, where it is...
You're not selling me so far.
It is a... No. It's sweet. It's not cynical.
Sure.
It's short. It's light. And it's very funny.
Okay.
And so it's... You know, you're not putting on your thinking cap for this one.
Sure.
But it's really funny. It's got a great cast. I think it's the best thing I've ever seen about teaching.
Really?
Yes. Because it's not... It's not a hero complex. As a matter of fact, they like rib on the one teacher who has a hero complex.
Yeah.
And it's also not an AP Bio or a bad teacher where it's incredibly
super cynical.
It's super cynical in a way that like real teachers aren't.
Right.
Like it's a little, it's ABC, so it's a little bit sometimes too optimistic.
Yeah.
But I think that it's like about good people who like care about teaching.
Sure.
And it captures the, for me, like the comedy of like the teacher's lounge in a way that like nothing else I've ever seen has, because it really is a lot like The Office.
Okay.
And it's got an Office vibe. Like it's got the confessionals, and it's supposed to be like a film crew is there filming for a documentary about an underfunded school. And it's just really funny. I don't know. That's it. It's just really funny, really well written, and feels fresh.
Who's behind it? Who makes this?
It was created by the star, Kinta Bronson, from Black Lady Sketch Show and from BuzzFeed. She used to do BuzzFeed videos. Okay. She's really funny. It's got a total, it's like there was The Office and then there was Parks and Recreation and now there's this. Like this is like that type of show, but in an elementary, in a public school.
Okay.
And she's sort of like the Leslie Knope. She's our main character. She's like a young, idealistic teacher.
Okay.
And in every episode, she gets up to some antics where she's like trying to get something for her class.
Okay.
Like a resource or something. And then it's got a good cast. There's like my favorite character. My two favorite characters are the principal. Eva Coleman is the character's name. She's really, really funny because she's like totally inept. She's kind of like the Michael Scott. Okay. Like you find out in the first episode, like she got the job because she goes to the same church as the superintendent. She's like, I go to the same church as the superintendent. And I saw him. I found out he was cheating on his wife with the deaconess and I just needed a job. So she's totally inept. And she's like a Jenna Maroney character. Uh-huh. Like she knows nothing about education. Uh-huh. And then there's like the veteran teacher who's really funny. Mm. There's Lisa Ann Walter is one of the veteran teachers. Chessie from The Parent Trap.
Sure.
I don't know. It's got a great ensemble. It's really funny, but like sweet. It's got a heart. Okay. And interestingly, it's an almost entirely black cast, but that's sort of not like what it's being sold as. Like sure. It's not like a Blackish where like that's part of it. It's not marketed as that. Yeah. Okay. So in that way, it's sort of groundbreaking too.
Right. Okay.
I just really like it. And like, it's not my obsession.
What made you watch it? Like what made you like, did someone else tell you about it?
Well, it's gotten a lot of buzz. Like it's gotten really, it's a really well reviewed show. It has 100% of Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. And I just saw like a lot of tweets. It's like every week that it's on, it trends on Twitter and a lot of people were talking about it. And a couple of my friends who are teachers were texting me like, you got to watch Abbott Elementary. It's so funny. And I didn't want to because I always avoid things about teaching because I feel like they're never right.
Sure, yeah.
But then I was like, let me try this one because other people are telling me it's good. And I watched it. And like I said, it's not my obsession because it's nothing to be obsessed about. It's just fun.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I got into Superstore and I watched like the first three seasons or something. And similar, like, it was good, wasn't great, had things I liked about it. I liked that it got a little political at some point and ended up being about making a union and stuff.
Mm, yeah.
One of the characters gets deported by ICE. But then I kind of just stopped watching it and I forgot about it.
Right. And it's probably like that. Like, it's a little bit cheesy. It's formulaic. You know, it's like a traditional, sitcom. It's a network show, but single camera and it's got the confessionals and all that. But like now that's kind of old hat.
That's basically like the three camera. Right, yeah, it's like the documentary style.
It takes place in a Philly school. One of my favorite characters, Lisa Ann Walter, plays like a South Philly Italian.
Uh-huh.
And she's always like got a hookup for something. And it's always like really shady. Okay. And then just one of the best lines is the teacher, Janine, the main teacher, she wants a new rug for her class because one of her students pees on her old rug.
Uh-huh.
And like there's no money in the budget for new rugs. So like she keeps telling her like, I got the hookup. I can get you a rug delivered. And she's like, no, I don't want one of your like stolen rugs. And then like she keeps trying to get like money from the district for it or whatever. And then it turns out like at the end, she's just like, okay, call your hookup. And she's like, she's just funny. She's like, give me 24 hours. And she's like, I got to bake a ziti now. It's really funny. And then the guy comes and delivers and they're all like Philadelphia Eagles rugs that were stolen, obviously. And they're like, what's your name? And then she's like, he doesn't got a name.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's worth a watch for sure.
It's fun.
It's on Hulu.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hulu, me and Jen, we're not through with it yet, but me and Jen have been watching The Dropout.
Is it real? I've heard it's like camp, like high camp.
No.
Is it not?
Well, it's interesting. I would not describe it that way. It's not super serious. I mean, there's humor in it.
But I've heard her performance is high camp.
No. Well, I think it's actually dead on to what she really did, though. I mean, the real Elizabeth Holmes used a fake voice.
No. Oh, really? So the affect is part of it?
Yeah. Like she really did that.
Like the way she says Theranos.
Theranos.
Yeah.
This is a exciting step forward.
She really did that. She really used a fake voice. Elizabeth Holmes is insane. And she's just playing the character, actually, I think, totally straight. And it's just, that's just how crazy. It's one of those things, like, it's funny because it really was insane. And how did this ever happen? Theranos.
Yeah, it's so, I don't know, just things that I haven't watched any of it. Things I've seen online, I see a bunch of like, you know the way the internet is, like stan culture.
Yeah.
People are like, we stan Lizzie.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you know, they just, it's one of those things where it's just like, it's so ridiculous that they're like, I'm obsessed. Yeah. And, Amanda Seyfried's performance is being talked about.
Yeah, we were saying good for Amanda Seyfried. Remember when she was like the dumb girl in Mean Girls? And now she's great. She was great in the movie Mank.
She's one of those people who's been around for a long time.
She just does
and
it.
Has a lot
she's
of
good.
Range and has done a lot of different things. Like even
Ted 2?
When Mean Girls was on, she was like the serious eldest daughter on Big Love.
Oh, see, I never saw that.
Yeah.
She's been good. She's good in comedy. She's good.
Yeah.
She's good. Good.
She's got in those Mamma Mia films, her bread and butter.
Oh, right. I forget about the Mamma Mia films. She's good as Elizabeth Holmes.
Thornos.
Do you see, like, there are scenes where she's, like, in the mirror, like, practicing her crazy voice?
Yeah. She was in Les Mis. She's been a lot of, she's been, yeah. What a mixed bag
she's
her career
around.
Has been.
She's fun in Ted, too.
Yeah.
It's the lawyer.
So it's good, The Dropout?
Yeah, we're not totally through with it yet, but we're enjoying it. We're also Stephen Fry is in it, and who doesn't love Stephen Fry?
So was she doing a character like based on
Steve Jobs?
Steve Jobs?
Sort of.
Because I know like she dressed like him.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was purposeful.
It's interesting because it's like she wasn't a straight up and down con artist. She at least started with good intentions, and then it kind of ran away from her. And so she started making shit up. And then she got really crazy with making shit up and taking money from people.
Well, that's the thing. Like, isn't her defense that, like, she was partial, like, at least in the beginning, she was deceived as well?
Well, she blames a lot of it on her boyfriend, who was also, like, he was also a big part of it.
Okay.
But I think that's kind of bullshit. I mean, the boyfriend is also very guilty. But, like, she was no victim. Like, she faked tests and
right.
she lied.
Is she,
and
she in jail or is she walking around scot-free?
She has not been sentenced yet. But okay. She did get convicted of a couple of counts. And she could go up to, like, 80 years.
Wow.
Because she defrauded a lot. Which, to me, now this is not to sound crazy because she's obviously a horrible person. To me, that's crazy. To go away for that long for financial crimes. Because, to me, it's like... was she a con artist? Yes. Did she put people in danger? Yes. Did she defraud people? Yes. But these old, rich, crusty white guys that gave her money, they get to just completely say, we had no idea and she fooled us and let's put her in jail forever?
Is the show sympathetic to her?
That's a great question. So far, a little bit.
Okay.
But it's more sympathetic to the people around, the more idealistic people around her, like Stephen Fry's character.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the early engineers who, like, he felt like she becomes
Are
more
these
and more
villain. Are real people or composite characters?
No, they're real people.
Okay.
Yeah. She becomes more and more villainous as it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But she is the protagonist. But she's also, and I don't know if this is true or not, like, they are presenting her almost as, like, maybe on the spectrum. Or maybe a sociopath. Like, there's a scene where she says, I don't feel things the way other people feel things.
Mm.
And there's a scene where she goes to the Apple store because she broke her iPhone. And the girl at the Genius Bar accidentally erases her iPhone. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I followed all the steps and I did it wrong. I'm so sorry. And she starts crying. And her man in the cypher is just looking at her. And then we see later on she's in the board meeting where they're going to, like, oust her for the first time. And she just repeats everything the girl said. And she starts crying and she's like, I'm so sorry. I did everything right. I followed all the steps. And you realize she's just completely
mimicking
emotions that she saw another person have.
Wow.
Which is, who knows if that's true, but
right.
I mean, she clearly is cuckoo bananas because she clearly, I mean, people.
Stop plugging your other podcast.
I know. People even, you know, even in real life, like in the documentaries about her, people are like, yeah, I remember when she changed her voice. It was real weird. She talked like an old person one day and then, and she's so dedicated to it. Like if you watch like clips now of her being interviewed and it's like, she's just doing a weird fake voice. Why? Like, why? But that's one of the things I'm sure. Okay.
You know what else? You know, we watched the other night. Did you watch Death on the Nile?
I have not watched any of the new Poirot films.
Okay.
What do you think about Kenneth Branagh and his Poirot films?
I like them. A lot of, like, diehard Christie fans don't like them.
Why is that?
Because Kenneth Branagh is, like, Branaghing them up, and he's, like, injecting a lot of humanity into Poirot. And
so he's actually being a more character than
right.
just...
Right. And diehard fans are like, Poirot's not a human being.
He's just
a machine. Yeah,
he's just a calculating detective.
Yeah. And he makes some changes.
I'm sure he adds action, too.
He does.
Yeah.
It was fun. I thought it was super fun.
How would you compare it to his Murder on the Orient Express?
Not as good.
Okay.
But... But good. And then they're making a third one.
Yeah, they'll probably keep going. I mean, there's a lot of those to make, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was the Pro TV series that went on forever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of Christie, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, why are we taking it so seriously? Like,
no, you say Christie, you mean Chris Christie.
Yes. Yeah, I mean Chris Christie.
I mean, the man went on a vacation. You can't blame him.
I mean, God. Agatha Christie.
Oh, okay.
The Queen of Mystery.
I've actually read nothing by her.
They're fun.
I can't read.
Don't take it too seriously. That would be my advice.
Okay.
Apparently he wants to keep going, Kenneth Branagh, and he wants to make Marple movies too.
Does he really? Yeah.
Miss Marple's the other big detective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From her books. I mean, they're just fun. I mean, it's not that deep, as the kids say.
Sure.
So Death on the Nile, it's like, I mean, it's just like Murder on the Orient Express. It's an all-star cast. It's super noir and pastiche, and it takes itself a little too seriously. I wish it was a little lighter.
Yeah.
But I thought it was fun. It, like, reeks of a COVID-delayed movie.
Why is that?
Because Armie Hammer is one of the main characters.
Does he eat anybody?
Yes. I like when I texted you that. You were like, it's good up until that part where Armie Hammer eats a woman. And you're like, that's quite a departure from the source material.
Yeah.
So it's... it was definitely filmed in, like, 2018 or 19 or something.
Okay.
But it was fun. I liked it.
Well, speaking of... mysteries. I recently read The Paris Apartment by Lucy Foley.
Okay.
This was, in the vein of what you were saying, this is a fun book. I mean, I could tear apart how every female character in it is a stereotype that's negative. But also, these are all supposed to be red herrings. Right. It's a woman author, but it's also like all of these people are supposed to be red herrings. So, of course, they're all going to be shitty. Like, you're supposed to think any one of them could be the killer.
Mm-hmm.
It did what a book like that's supposed to do. First of all, it was sexy as all hell. People are blowing each other and fucking each other. Blowing each other.
Right there on the page.
This one dude gets blown by this guy, his friend, and then fucks that guy's mother. Mother and son he had.
Pages apart.
Yeah. It's wild. And it's a good, as I said on Goodreads, it's got more twists and turns than a barrel of snakes.
I can't believe you left that review on Goodreads.
I absolutely did.
You know, some like a 60-year-old woman in the Midwest is like, well, now I'm going to read it after that review.
Oh my goodness. This man is blowing another man. It does what it's supposed to do. You know, some things I think actually aren't totally made for reflection.
Yeah,
made
exactly.
For like going on the ride. You know, I'm sure if I read it again, now knowing who the killer is, I would see shit and be like, ooh, that was nice. They put that in there. That was a good... But at the time, I was like, who's it? Is it this guy? For this chapter, I think it's this guy. But now I'm pretty sure it's this guy. But, oh, they're making me think it's that guy so hard. Right. It can't be that guy. And, oh, shit, it's really this person. And then... And it really... It's one of those things where, like, every other chapter ends with, like, a what?
That's the best kind of book.
It was the kind of book where I read the first half kind of normally, but then the second half I read all at once. Because it was like, I'm the home stretch. My protagonist is in danger now, so I can't leave her alone. Because it's basically, I haven't said, it's this apartment in Paris, and there's like five different stories. Like these big apartments, and we learn about all the, you know, the rich matron on the top floor, and then the young two girls that live on the third floor, the fourth floor, and then our victim who lives on the third floor, and he's missing, and his sister comes to visit him, and she's staying in his apartment, but she wants to figure out what happened to him, and she can't trust anybody, and then, you know, and it's just who did it and who done it. Who done it?
It's so much fun. It's like, you know, like you said, not everything's meant for reflection. Not everything is meant for deep analysis. Like, I like stuff like that.
I saw an interview with Toni Morrison where they were like, what do you mostly read? And she was like, honestly, I mostly just read mystery books. I just read them a lot because they're fun.
They're
and
fun.
It's true. They are fun.
Even, I mean, there's other stuff too. Like, Mexican Gothic was like that. That book is a little bit, like, more layered, but that was a lot of fun. And then, like, even, like, I like those Philippa Gregory books where it's just, like, those, like, the books about, like, the Tudor family and, like,
okay,
the other Boleyn girl and all those books.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah,
just,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just, like, sexy times. Oh, it's fun.
There are chapters in this that pull such fun, that are so cheap. Like, it'll end with, and he walked upon me, and I saw him pick something silver out of his pocket. Chapter break. Different chapter of a different character. Go back to that character. Oh, it's just a cigarette lighter. All right. You made it sound like a gun before, but I'll go with it. You know, somebody jumped on me, and then it ends, and then, oh, it was a cat. Like, yeah, we're just all having fun.
So good.
We're all having a good time. People are fucking and sucking and murdering each other. And, you know, there's always, class is always such a big part of mysteries.
Always.
You know, it's always, there's always, like, rich people and they have secrets.
Secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what else? You reading anything?
It's been a dry spell for me, sure. Reading-wise.
Sure, sure.
I read that book, My Mess is a Bit of a Life.
I read that as well.
It was fun. It was quick. It was funny.
Well, you're a Veep fan, right? Is that why you read it?
Yes, I love Veep.
I haven't watched Veep, and I didn't even know that she was the writer of Veep until, like, I was reading the book.
Yeah. So it's... Well, on the book jacket, there's like a quote from Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Right, yeah.
That was funny. I mean, nothing that, like...
It's funny, but it's written in a sort of
It's like snippet by snippet by snippet.
Yeah, there are things that are not said that I wish were said.
Yeah.
Like, because it has a sort of diary, bloggy feel.
Yeah.
And, like, there'll be sort of ellipses where you're like, wait, what happened in between these two things?
Yeah.
Like, she talks about fearing that her children might be developmentally disabled, and then later on, they just are. Mm-hmm. Or one of them is, or maybe they both are. It's not clear.
It's not. It didn't stay with me. It didn't. It was nothing that, like, I didn't love it, but... Yeah. I liked it.
She had a very good dry wit.
Yeah,
some of
for
the
sure.
Like, there was a quote of hers that I may have put on my Instagram.
She's got that funny thing of, like, a kid with anxiety is like a 50-year-old in the body of a 6-year-old.
Right. Which how could I not?
Right. It's just completely a funny trope.
Yeah, like, this is, I posted this on Instagram. Cake. I didn't like parties when I was a child because, well, who really likes parties? But one time I came back from a party, to my parents' amazement, I said I had a good time. Why, they asked. I had cake and didn't join in any of the games. That has very much been my approach to life. You know, it's shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like same girl.
Yeah. And it is sort of, there's something that's, some things are not very clear. Like, in the beginning, it seemed like it was going to be about her not speaking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't she mention that she was, like, nonverbal for a while because of her anxiety?
She also talks later on about feeling really sick and doctors not knowing what's wrong with her. Yeah. And that never really gets explained.
I guess it's really just, like, snapshots from the mind of somebody who's always had, like, severe anxiety.
How do you... So, as someone who watches Veep, do you feel like you can see her voice?
Only in that Veep can be incredibly dry. Veep is like the closest thing, like, I could, the closest thing I can think of when I think of, like, describing Veep is it's kind of got like a British humor to it.
Well, it was originally a British show, right? Or no. It was based on a British show.
No, the creator
made thick of it,
made In the Thick of It or whatever, which is like similar, but it's not this, it's in, I think it's in the same universe as that, but it's not this, it's not the same characters.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's, Veep is really, really cynical, can be really dry, very, very vulgar.
Okay.
But, like, really, really funny. And, like, if you're somebody who follows politics closely, it's, like, even funnier.
Okay.
I love Veep, and I think that it's just, like, Julie Louis-Dreyfus's best performance ever is as Selina Meyer.
Okay.
She's just so good. And as... It's one of those shows or movies or whatever where it's like every character is a bad person.
Sure.
None of them are redeemable. They're all horrible. Yeah. And like as the show goes on, she gets more and more horrible to like the point where in the last season, like she's basically a villain.
Okay.
But she's the one you're following.
Uh-huh.
Because really all she wants to do is be president. Even though she doesn't like people, she doesn't believe in anything, she doesn't actually know a lot. Like about politics whatever. She's very inept. And it's sort of like it starts with her being the VP that like always wants to be in on what the president's doing, but the president never lets her in. Okay. And it's like you don't even know the president's name. You never see the president.
Oh, okay.
Then eventually the show changes, she becomes president, things change, whatever. Yeah. But it's good. And so anyway, to answer your question, the dryness, but other stuff, no.
Did it end? Is it over?
It ended, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It ended right. Julie Louis-Dreyfus has said it ended at just the right time because it ended like right before the Trump era.
Okay.
And she's like, now we couldn't have Veep on because what's actually going on in Washington is way more funny and ridiculous than anything we did on Veep.
Yeah.
And people who worked in the Trump White House have said famously, like, the things that went on in the Trump White House were like Veep.
Wow. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back with our obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno.
Hi, guys.
This is Obsessions. This is where we talk about what we are currently obsessed with.
Obsessions.
What are you currently obsessed with?
This is, I don't want to say it's a weird one, because it's not.
No judgment.
But it's not a show or a movie or anything.
That's fine.
And there's no reason why I should be obsessed with it now, because it's not like it's new.
That's fine.
But I've lately just become obsessed with Reductress.
Okay, talk about it.
Okay, so Reductress is a satirical website. It's like fake news. It's like The Onion.
Yeah.
Which I love. I have a soft spot for that. But it's funnier than The Onion.
Okay.
And it's meant to mimic women's media.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I find it so funny, and it's so like kind of like my humor.
Sure.
That like I've been told. Janine told me, she was just like, I feel like you are on the staff of Reductress because I'm just always sending headlines. Like, so for example, I just pulled it up and like the top story is good news. Random tarot card reader on TikTok said everything's going to be fine. Like just the headlines alone are so funny. And then when you, Janine said they reward you for reading the articles, and they do. Like if you actually read them, they're actually really funny when you read them too. This boyfriend going to therapy wrong.
What was that?
Boyfriend is going to therapy wrong. Although your relationship has improved, sources say you have concluded that this must all be some kind of sick joke. Why I quit my job to focus on being nostalgic full time. it's fun. I don't know. It's fun, and I like have been reading it before bed every night, and I just like chuckle myself to sleep. It's really funny.
chuckle myself to sleep.
I like this one. Huh. Man's new beard works really, really well, actually.
Fun.
I love fake news. I want to write fake news.
What do you think about... And when you say fake news, you don't mean fake news in the... I don't mean CNN. Charged.
No. Yeah. I mean like...
So do you mean actual...
Satirical news, like The Onion and stuff.
What do you think that...
It's something
means
about...
Means something to us.
I don't know why it is. I've thought about this. I think it's something about the style of writing is so... Like, we associate it with being elevated, but when you write in that style and that tone about something so ridiculous, it makes it funny.
Right.
Like, I guess that's what makes it funny. It's hard to explain sometimes what makes something funny, but I think that's what it is. Like, even the headlines alone.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm just looking, like, they them pronouns suddenly easy for person misgendering trans woman. Like, it's just, even on The Onion, like, one of my favorite ones on The Onion is the headline was like, according to students, dedicated teacher of 40 years is actually total bitch.
Yeah, right. And that one was like, as she pays for her own supplies and stays up late to grade your paper, she's a total fucking bitch.
Yeah, and I love that, like, the idea of, like, there'd be a news story about something that's so insignificant.
Well, I don't know if this is on purpose as an Easter egg or not, but every Onion article features the term at press time.
Okay.
Like, at press time, the four-year-old said his mom... Like, it always features that term. Well, think about it. The biggest mainstay on Saturday Night Live is the news segment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So that's the only thing that's really not changed in SNL. Mm-hmm.
There's four photos of Zendaya and Tom Holland that make us want to fight God. Just like, so funny.
There was a good SNL, and I'm not an SNL fan really, but there was a good joke recently. It was a Colin Jost joke. He was like, there was a major tsunami off the coast of wherever, and scientists say it started when your mama fell off a boat.
So good. It's the misdirect. Look at this one. Close-up of hands confirms movie will turn gay.
That's so true.
And then the deck says, I knew that I was in for a wild sapphic ride.
That's hilarious. What is it about? Some people believe these things, though.
Oh, well, yeah, I've seen that so many times, which is truly like you're just such an idiot. That's
truly sad.
I've been thinking about this, especially since right now I'm about to teach a unit on Born a Crime by Trevor Noah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm trying to introduce to the students, and I have young students this year, The Daily Show and why so many people like The Daily Show. And it's hard to like explain that to a kid who's not ready to learn why that's funny.
Right. And especially with The Daily Show, because that went from something more like SNL to something that then became a trusted news source.
But funny.
Right. It was almost like for a certain, like during the Bush administration and the Obama administration, like liberals wanted their news like tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember it was like 2008 or 2009, they did a poll of like who's the person you trust most, and it was John Stewart. And he was like, this is very disturbing because I'm not a news person.
Right.
But I mean, it is really interesting. And it's also interesting that conservatives for a while tried it and couldn't do it. But now there's some guy, I don't know who he is, that's like doing better. And it's because us liberals have become more silly, so it's easier to make fun of us.
Mm-hmm, yeah, for sure.
So you are beginning to see... part of me feels... One thing that feels weird to me is we do have a lot of media illiterate people. And part of me just feels like, are we poisoning the well by putting out...
Fake stuff.
Like, even though, like, it may seem so obviously fake. Like,
it's not to everybody.
Leah, what was the one... It's not around anymore, but it was, like... I think it was by The Onion, but it was, like, supposed to be, like, BuzzFeed.
Clickhole.
Right, and they did spider eggs and Beanie Babies finally hatching. And I remember people freaking out about it on the internet. Like, this is not real.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
You ever see The Onion Stop and Kiss?
Yes.
That's one of the best things ever.
Yeah, it's weird. I ended up showing the kid some of his stand-up as an entree into it rather than The Daily Show. I think if they get to know him as a person first, it'll make more sense. Because his stand-up is about his life growing. A lot of it is about his life, like being a fish out of water, having grown up in South Africa and living in the United States now.
Yeah.
And then that's what the book's about. I don't know. So, but anyway, back to your... question. Yeah, I guess there is, you are going to have some people inevitably who are going to fall for it. And it does, I guess, poison the well a bit to intentionally put fake stuff out there that looks like news, especially now when it's so, it is a lot of people are trusting the wrong things.
Yeah. And you can't trust something being so ridiculous that people won't believe it.
Because they will.
Because people will.
Yeah. But anyway, so Reductress is my current obsession, and you should all check it out. It's really, really funny.
It's been around a while.
It has been. It's been around a while. Well, I think it's been around like 10 years or something.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly a while for the internet.
They have I lived it. It's like testimonies. I lived it. I fell four stories giving Roadhead in the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car. That's so good.
That's fantastic.
Look at this one. Thoughts. Here's why having mixed children makes me less white. So good. I love good satire.
Me too.
There's not enough of it these days.
Yeah. So my current obsession is Sleazoid Express.
Okay.
Sleazoid Express. I'm reading the book version of it, which is written by Bill Landis and Michelle Clifford. Bill Landis, also known as Mr. Sleazoid. But it originally was a zine that was just self-published. And Bill Landis was, he had been, I think, like a stockbroker or something, but at night he was...
Batman.
He was Mr. Sleazoid. He would go and hang out in Times Square.
Okay.
42nd Street in Times Square, which they called the Deuce.
Did he have a get-up? Like, did he wear a...
No. He would just... This is what I like about... It's unconventional film criticism. He wrote about grindhouse and exploitation films that were made by people on 42nd Street and showed on 42nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And often they would just die on 42nd Street. You'd make these films and they would last, you know, a couple months and then that was it. And there were all these different versions of exploitation. There were what they call the roughies, which were like S&M ones. Then there was softcore porn. He talks about, in the book version, every chapter is a different theater on 42nd Street and focusing on a different film. And he'll begin talking about the production and how they got the money and all that crazy shit, and then get into a reading of what the film is, you know, oh, it's a, you know, one film I wrote about, I read about was White Slaves of Chinatown, which was an S&M film about this woman who like takes these white girls and like whips them and sells them into, and like it's this crazy like celebration of exploitation and that dirty side of New York. And but even in like the 90s, he was like, oh, it's getting too sanitized, like the Deuce used to be such a great place to fucking get heroin. And he, and it's interesting, like,
well, Giuliani came along and
yeah,
that went goodbye.
He talks about like, oh, this is a good theater to nod off in. Like, you go in this theater and you see lots of junkies just nodding off, but then the movies are really good too. And it's so anthropological for me, because it's about a time and place that I don't know anything about. It's about movies that I've really never heard about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these movies would
do they even still exist?
No, I mean, I found some of them on like YouTube, and some of them maybe made it to DVD, but for the most part, they just sort of like, they were really almost like throwaways. You'd make it for a couple $1,000s. It would be exploitative. It would have, you know, boobies and violence and something.
Boobies and violence.
Or you know, or S&M. And it would play. And sometimes it would be popular, but popular not really. Like, not popular, like, in the sense that any other movie is really popular. It was like its own little film culture on this, like, this little block. These people hung out there and partied there and made movies for there. It's such a wild scene. And then Sleazoid himself like started doing porn, and he became a drug addict, and he eventually died of a drug overdose. Ooh, I think.
Well, that's very sad.
But he was a good writer. Like, I'm trying to think of who he's like. It's like,
is it like Kerouac-ish?
He reminds me a little bit of Bukowski in its bluntness and like just the way he'll describe somebody.
So it's
like,
bad.
No, it's good.
No, I'm kidding.
Because it's also like film criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fan of film critics. I love criticism for people that aren't trained critics. Like Vito Russo, who was really just a LGBTQ activist. And then would like, he wrote The Celluloid Closet, which is like a huge text in film studies from a guy who never, I don't even went to college. He just wrote about films. And Sleazoid's the same way, though he's not as good a writer as Vito Russo. But it's just a really interesting book. It's called A Mind-Twisting Tour Through Grindhouse Cinema of Times Square, Sleazoid Express by Bill Landis and Michelle Clifford. And this is the cover. It's pretty wild and fun. You know, he has these short little sentences. He has these people that he clearly fucking hates, and like, you know, he's very caustic with his language, and it's just really interesting. It's not for everybody, but if you're like a film person that's always interested in like seeing more ways of looking at things, which I am, I think you'd like it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. I checked that out.
Yeah. This is PCMC. We're available anywhere podcasts are found. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, everyone.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.